property. Once he made it onto the public beach, he started to come across other early morning joggers. They nodded and smiled at him, like he was a normal person. He found his way to a beachside juice bar. With a few bucks from his Earthguard living stipend, Caleb bought himself a peanut butter and banana smoothie. Drink in hand, sweat damp on his back, he settled into a chair on the store's porch, which looked out over the ocean. Occasionally, Caleb glanced down at his watch. He was supposed to meet Wade Seidel that morning at 9, so the inventor could run some tests on him. It was 10 before he finished his smoothie. "Oops," Caleb said. He didn't make his way back to the beach house until a couple of hours later, when he was sure that Seidel had to have gone into his office. He was right. The place was pretty much deserted. Caleb found Daniela out by the pool, soaking her feet while she finished the last few pages of her novel. She tipped her sunglasses down to look at him.
"Yo, everybody was looking for you," she said.
"I went for a jog and lost track of time," Caleb said, the lie practiced.
"Uh-huh," Daniela replied. "Wade was all disappointed you didn't go to the office with him, but Melanie volunteered instead. I guess she's going to lift a bunch of shit while Seidel measures the energy stored up in her muscles."
"Great," Caleb said, plopping down next to Daniela and sticking his feet into the pool.
"Honestly," she lowered her voice a little, "I don't really want that dude running tests on me either. I made some chunks of stone for him to analyze. He seemed cool with that."
"It's weird, right?" Caleb said, relieved that Daniela was on his side. "It's like he wants to figure out how legacies work, so he can cut us out of the process." Daniela held up her hand.
"Okay, whoa. I just don't want him poking me and ogling me like he does his assistants. I'm not going in on a whole conspiracy thing with you."
Caleb and Daniela both turned as the screen door behind them snapped open. Lucinda, the Seidel assistant who had caught Caleb in the workshop the other day, stood there with a raised eyebrow.
"Uh-huh," she said. "There you are, Mr. Crane."
Lucinda wore a pencil skirt and a blouse that she'd tied off to show a little midriff. Caleb hadn't realized the word sachet was in his vocabulary until he watched Lucinda approach them. Lucinda stopped in front of them, her hip cocked to one side, and smirked. She eyed Caleb for a moment before speaking.
"Mr. Seidel was very disappointed you missed your appointment this morning," Lucinda said.
Yeah, Caleb said, swallowing. "I went out for a run and lost track of time. Tell him I'm sorry."
"You can tell him yourself. At dinner," Lucinda said. "You'll be there, right? Or are you planning to disappear again?"
"No," Caleb said. "I'll be around."
"Good," Lucinda replied.
She started toying with the knot on her shirt while she spoke, which Caleb found incredibly distracting.
"Mr. Seidel would also like to know if you guys are okay with steak for dinner."
Caleb replied. "What?" Daniela snickered.
"Yeah, that's cool. Thanks."
Lucinda smiled at Caleb, then swayed her way back into the house. Daniela elbowed him.
"I think she was flirting with you, man."
"Seriously? No way." Daniela patted Caleb's shoulder.
"Except that we're super-powered rock stars."
There had been guests at dinner every night since the guard had arrived in Florida. Officers from Seidel's company, representatives from NASA and the military, rich friends. But tonight's crowd was relatively small. It was just Seidel's entourage and the guard. Seidel sat at the head of the long table on the sun porch, a fire pit crackling nearby, the smell of grilled meat heavy in the air. He was flanked by four of his assistants,
two guys and two girls, one of them Lucinda. The ones that were currently staying at the beach house to jot down Seidel's thoughts and see to his needs whenever they popped up. Was Seidel hooking up with one of his assistants? Caleb and Daniela had discussed that and come to no conclusions. He was affectionate with all of them, perhaps inappropriately so. Maybe that explained why Seidel's lawyer, a frumpy older man fresh from the golf course, was also present. The spread was delicious, even if Caleb didn't want to admit it. Juicy steak, corn on the cob that was somehow fresh despite not being in season, potato wedges, a bunch of different salads, all served and bussed by Seidel's jovial live-in waitstaff. Someone was always nearby to top off Seidel's wine glass. To Caleb's relief, Seidel spent most of dinner deep in conversation with his lawyer, the assistants taking notes. Meanwhile, Melanie sat across from the guard, looking bored. Eventually, she forced herself to make conversation.
"What did you guys do today?"
"Chilled by the pool," Daniela said.
"Nothing," Caleb said. Melanie sighed.
"Cool. I hung out at Wade's office all day, because someone no-showed. But he didn't even have time to experiment on me."
"Tragic," Daniela said.
"He's going to give me a spaceship to apologize," Melanie replied.
Caleb wasn't sure if she was joking or not. "Sorry I missed our appointment," Caleb mumbled to Seidel when the CEO caught his eye.
"Caleb, my man, no worries," Seidel replied. "Like Melanie said, today was actually really busy for me. We got some offers on the Shepherd One. Seems like we're going to up our production schedule."
His lawyer, done eating and now busy with a tablet computer, slid the device in Seidel's direction.
"We've already got patent license offers from Northrop and Lockheed," the lawyer told Seidel, his voice low, but not low enough to avoid Caleb's ears. "The Navy and Air Force both want to know if you see any applications for ICBMs.
Seidel smiled.
"Lots, obviously. The propulsion system would scale perfectly. The range would be basically limitless."
Caleb shook his head and shoved another forkful of steak into his mouth. They were talking about intercontinental ballistic missiles. Of course the military would be interested in that. He imagined his dad and his brothers back at the base, discussing the farthest distance they could kill from. "Also," the lawyer continued in Seidel's ear, "we heard back from our contacts in Europe. They're ready to sell. But the deal is happening in Switzerland, and it has been requested that you come in person within the next 24 hours. Seidel stroked his chin.
"Switzerland, eh? I could do some skiing, I sup-
Excuse me, but why would you want to put your technology on something meant to kill people?" The table fell silent, and everyone turned their attention to Caleb. He raised his eyebrows and swallowed an uncomfortably large bite of steak. The duplicate that now stood behind Caleb's chair didn't have anything in his mouth. He fixed Seidel with a churlish sneer. It half reminded Caleb of Nigel in that moment, like a student challenging a teacher. Seidel's lawyer looked uncomfortable, but at the sight of the duplicate, the man himself grinned.
"Finally! A demonstration! It's as cool as advertised!"
Seidel clapped his hands. He looked from Caleb to the duplicate and back.
"I'm not sure which one of you I should even look at. Amazing! To answer your question, the primary purpose of missiles is to act as a deterrent, not to, you know, actually kill anyone. But that's not what's important right now. Seriously, buddy, Caleb, we have got to run those tests. Like, I want to go back to the office tonight."
Seidel, mind working perhaps as fast as his mouth, glanced at Lucinda.
"You see this? That's matter creation right there. Imagine the implications if we could crack that. Got one potato? Boom! Now you've got 20. No more famine.
If I'm a potato, declared the duplicate, then you're a death merchant. That drew some murmurs from the rest of the diners. Caleb chanced a glance up from his plate and saw that the assistants were all giving him dirty looks. All of them except for smirking Lucinda. Daniela put a hand on Caleb's forearm.
Damn, dude. Chill.
Again, Seidel didn't seem to take exception. He was unflappable.
Death merchant, he said. That's a good one. Would look cool on a business card. But no, Caleb, I don't think of myself that way. I'm an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, an inventor. I like to say that I've got my fingers on the pulse of the future.
The duplicate put his hand on Caleb's shoulders. We were attacked by weapons you made. Shock collars, grenades, all kinds of shit. And not just at practice in school. These were hillbilly Bible thumpers shooting at us. You made that happen.
I'm sorry that happened to you, but...
Wade is just trying to keep the world safe, Melanie interrupted, glaring at Caleb. In case one of us loses control of our powers or something, like what's happening right now.
Caleb had been taking a back seat to the duplicate's rant. He'd already lost control and caused a scene, might as well let it play out. But Melanie's sharp voice brought him back to himself. In an instant, he'd absorbed the duplicate and was peering down at the scraps on his plate, cheeks flushed red.
I'm sorry, he mumbled.
Daniela patted his back, trying to defuse the situation.
Too much sun for this guy.
It's all good, Seidel said.
His smile had never faltered.
Passionate discussion is the backbone of intellectual progress, son. I heard what you said, and I'm definitely going to think about it. I promise you.
Seidel dusted off his hands like the matter was closed. Caleb felt immense relief. He even liked Seidel a little bit for how easily he'd let Caleb off the hook. Melanie was still glaring at him, of course, but he could live with that.
I have some bad news, by the way, Seidel began. An investment of mine is finally bearing fruit, and I need to go to Switzerland to inspect the results. I know you guys were planning to stay for a few more days, but I'm afraid I have to cut this visit short.
Melanie glowered at Caleb, like this was all his fault. He sank deeper into his chair, avoiding eye contact.
Well, Daniela said, it was fun while it lasted.
After dinner, Seidel and his gang of assistants retired to his home theater to watch an advanced screening of a new space opera that was set to be released in a couple of months. Seidel had been the technical consultant. Melanie and Daniela joined them, but Caleb decided it was best if he kept his distance. He sighed. It was just like those first months at the academy. He was the weirdo again. Caleb wandered around the massive house. He soaked his feet in the pool for a bit, but January in Florida could be chilly, so eventually he went inside. He drifted by the screening room. He could hear Seidel crack some joke, at which all the assistants laughed. With a frown, he wandered to his room. Tomorrow, he promised himself, he would do like Daniela said. Blend in. Be like the crab. Be normal.
You're right to be suspicious of him.
Caleb turned at the sound of Lucinda's voice. She stepped out of the shadowy hallway that led down to Seidel's workshop. She had a backpack slung over her shoulder. Stuffed full of what, Caleb couldn't tell. She had a mischievous twinkle in her eye, like she'd just been up to something and was challenging Caleb to call her on it.
Who?
That was the most articulate response Caleb could manage.
Seidel, dummy. Lucinda replied,
smirking at him, in a way Caleb found oddly familiar.
He talks and talks and talks, yes? Only evil men talk so much.
Are you... Caleb glanced over his shoulder to make sure they were alone.
Are you sure you should be talking about your boss that way?
That handsy little toad is not my boss. I have no boss.
Lucinda stepped closer.
He has a deal with the Foundation, you know. That's what he's going to Switzerland for. To pick up some alien thingy they've got for him. You need to find a way to go with him, Caleb.
How do you...
As Lucinda drew near, her features changed. Her hair turned dark, her eyes sharp and knowing, her skin a flawless tan. Isabella.
Hello, handsome, she said, and kissed his cheek. I've come to destroy the bad guys. Are you going to help, or what?
Chapter 32 The Fugitive Six. Engelberg, Switzerland. Endpoints in between. Nigel's iPod blasted the clash as he pushed his shopping cart through the aisles of the grocery store. He bopped his head along with the music, happy to be out from under his mother's watchful eye, if only for a little while. He'd been cooped up in this little town for weeks now, a prisoner of sorts, though he had free rein to do anything he wanted in the sleepy, windswept hamlet. Mostly, that limited his choices to browsing at the bookstore, gazing at the Alps, or aimlessly wandering the streets with his headphones warming his ears. There were Blackstone mercenaries stationed throughout the town, keeping an eye on him. Still, he could have given them the slip if he really wanted. His mom had bet that he would stay. And she was right. Something was going to happen here. He wanted to see how it played out. Chips, a sausage, cookies, and a couple boxes of the most marshmallow-filled cereal he could find. These things Nigel dumped into his cart. It was all so utterly mundane. In fact, after those first few days, his entire visit with Bea had been that way. Most of the time, when she wasn't video-chatting with one of her evil comrades, the two of them just chilled out. They played cards, watched movies, ate frozen pizzas. His mom wasn't so bad, if you could forget she was a megalomaniacal killer. There were times when she conducted Foundation business in front of him, trying to make him feel like a part of it. He'd seen Taylor on video chat. So she'd finally managed to infiltrate, after all their setting up. Some proper secret agent shit, that. He wondered about the story she told B. Ran and Copano, abducted by Earthguard as punishment for the tiff with the Harvesters. Was that true? A cover story? Clearly, B thought knowing that would sway him to her side. She thought she could wear him down during this protracted vacation. It wouldn't work. He would stop Einar from killing her. Couldn't very well let that prick win, could he? And once that was done, he would bring his mother and all her cronies to justice. His cart full, Nigel wheeled his way to the checkout counter. There, he dumped all the groceries on the conveyor belt and bagged them himself. He did a rough tally of how much he'd taken, then took some of his mom's money out of his wallet and stuck it alongside the unattended cash register. There wasn't another soul in the grocery store. In fact, most of Engelberg had been evacuated due to a phony avalanche warning. He still wasn't sure how old B had pulled that one off. The only people left in town were Nigel, his mom, and a dozen Blackstone mercenaries. Whatever was going down, it was happening soon. Taylor snapped awake as their chartered plane hit some turbulence over Romania, She wiped the back of her hand across her mouth. She'd been drooling. The exhaustion was real. She'd seen herself in the bathroom mirror a couple of hours ago. There were dark circles around her eyes, and she swore she could see some strands of gray in her hair. She'd really pushed herself that night at the warship, and was still recovering. It had been worth it, though. She was getting close. Close to the center of the Foundation. She was carrying a beacon right to them. There were dark clouds outside her window. She sat up in her seat, blinking groggily. The XO sat directly across from her, an amused smile on his freckled face.
"Well, starting to think you could sleep through anything," he said. "Been bumpy for the last hour."
As if on cue, the plane vibrated once again. Taylor's stomach did a loop, but she kept her face stoic. She flashed the XO a cocky grin.
"Little turbulence is nothing after you've fought Mogadorians."
He laughed.
"You're a piece of work, Cook."
She really was. God, how had it been less than a year since she first developed her legacies? What would the Taylor of last winter think of Taylor now? She'd been a farm girl with a simple life that made her happy. Now? She was on a plane flying across Europe with a mercenary captain. Life came at you fast.
"Speaking of those things, I've got a question for you," Taylor said.
Now that she was fully awake, it was time to get back to pumping the XO for information.
"When I was hiding inside the warship, I heard a voice."
The XO snorted.
"Oh, you heard her, eh? Our nutty Moog lost in outer space."
"What's the deal with her?"
"She's always making those broadcasts," the XO said. "Doesn't seem like anyone much cares, so long as she stays behind the moon."
The XO shifted in his seat, and his suitcase banged against his knee. He winced and readjusted himself. The reinforced steel briefcase was radiation-proofed, but even so, Taylor could tell the XO was uncomfortable having it handcuffed to his wrist. Inside were a dozen vials of the viscous Mogadorian ooze, ready for delivery. Taylor nodded at the briefcase.
"Doesn't that stuff freak you out?"
The XO eyed her.
"A job is a job."
"Yeah, sure," she said. "But that crap is like poison, and you're just carrying it around."
"Kid, has anyone ever told you that it isn't your place to ask questions?"
Taylor rolled her eyes.
"Sure, I get that a lot."
"Yeah. Well, it's not my place either. Young people think that they're the only ones getting bossed around, living in the dark. Shit, that's the adult life too, unless you're further up the food chain than me."
He patted the briefcase.
"So, we take this where it's going. That's our lot. But hell yeah, Cook. I'll be happy when this thing is off me."
"Won't be long now," Taylor said.
Nigel's mom waited for him outside the grocery store. She stubbed out a cigarette when he emerged and smiled at him. Smoking and drinking. She'd been doing that a fair bit these last few days. For all her calm demeanor, Bea was nervous about this plan of hers. She peeked into one of his bags.
"Nigel, my goodness, this is all junk. I told you we have guests coming."
"What? You expect me to roll out the red carpet for a sociopath with a 50% success rate offing Barnaby's?"
Bea pinched his cheek, her fingers cold despite the unreasonable warmth at the base of the mountain.
"My dear, we're expecting more guests than just Einar."
Caleb rubbed his eyes, thinking back on that late-night call made on a cell phone provided by Isabella.
"Uncle Clarence?"
"Jesus, Caleb!
It's the middle of the goddamn night.
Wade Seidel is going to Switzerland.
You called me at 3 a.m. to tell me that?
I can't tell you more for operational security reasons. But you have to make him take us with him. Say he needs Earth Guard protection or something. Pull some strings.
Caleb, that's one big goddamn ask.
It's important, Caleb had said. And if you ever want me to trust you, really trust you, this will be a good start. He'd barely slept after that. And now Caleb sat on a padded bench at the back of the Shepherd One, as far away from the others as he could get. He chewed his thumbnail and tried mentally to get his armpits to stop sweating.
How great is this?
Seidel shouted from the front of the circular passenger compartment, his face pressed to the window glass that went all the way around the space, affording lucky passengers a 360-degree view of blue sky and ocean.
I'm so, so glad you guys could experience this with me.
Of course, Seidel had chosen to take his flying saucer to Switzerland. Seidel extended his arms, showing off for the group gathered in the ship's lounge. That included Daniela and Melanie, and a trio of Seidel's stern-faced personal security guards. None of his assistants had been brought along. Maybe he felt like he couldn't trust them after what went down that morning. Lucinda, apparently disappearing with a bunch of files stolen from Seidel's workshop. And then the call from Earth Guard informing Seidel that there were credible threats being made against his life. Because of his close ties with the military, the trio of guard had been assigned to him as bodyguards. Vacation was over. Uncle Clarence had pulled it off.
You guys feel that steadiness?
Seidel asked, not seeming the least bit bothered by his recent betrayal or the looming death threats.
It's like flying on a cloud. And check out that ocean view. Amazing. Tell me this isn't going to change the future of air travel.
It's so, so cool, Melanie replied, not even looking away from her window.
Caleb glanced out his window, and his stomach turned over, but not from the heights or the ocean whipping by below. He couldn't get what Isabella had told him last night out of his head. She'd been in a hurry to make her escape as Lucinda, but she'd found time to tell Caleb about Seidel's dealings with the Foundation. How had she come by this information? How long had she been Lucinda? How was she even out from the academy? Where were the others?
Better you don't know yet, she told him. You won't like it, Boy Scout.
As if that information wasn't weighing on him enough, Isabella had told him there was danger coming.
We are going to bring him down, she had said. Him and these Foundation dogs. You must promise to stay out of our way. You must trust me, Caleb. We must be loyal to each other.
Caleb felt sick. He also felt an agitated duplicate starting to pop out. He focused on keeping his feelings buried. One of Seidel's guards stepped over to the beaming magnate. Caleb leaned forward to hear what was said.
Our team in Florida apprehended Lucinda, the guard reported to Seidel.
Oh, wonderful,
Seidel replied, making no effort to keep their conversation private.
Tell our people to prosecute as harshly as possible.
Thing is, the guard continued, she was tied up in her apartment. Claimed that someone jumped her a couple of days ago. None of the stolen property was recovered.
Well,
for the first time, Caleb saw a glimmer of annoyance on Seidel's smooth face.
That's certainly curious.
Caleb missed the rest of the conversation as Daniela sidled up next to him.
Yo, quiet guy, she said. Everything okay?
Caleb itched around his collar.
Yeah, I'm just feeling off.
If you're still brooding about dinner last night, you should stop. No one even remembers you going off on Seidel, she said with a grin. Or maybe you're down because hot-ass Lucinda ended up being a cat burglar or something? Caleb touched Daniela's arm and lowered his voice. I just have a bad feeling about this. You're nothing but bad feelings, man. You... Daniela trailed off, noticing the seriousness on Caleb's face. You know something, see? Just stay on your toes, okay? Are you aware that this tiny landlocked nation is one of the world's wealthiest and most stable, with one of the highest standards of living? Nigel responded with a bored groan. The two of them walked through the abandoned village, heading towards the mountains. Nigel was still lugging the groceries, and now regretted getting that extra tub of pretzels. His hands were cold and tired. But then, there was no one around. So, he used his telekinesis to carry the bags, and stuffed his hands into his coat pockets. The display of power didn't even register with B. Do you know how Switzerland came to that status? I'm sure you're about to tell me, Mum. Nazi gold, B continued. The Swiss remained neutral during the war, and the Nazis needed a place to hide the ill-gotten gains they'd looted from their victims. The Swiss banks were happy to oblige, and when the Third Reich collapsed, the Swiss just happened to be holding all their profits. They were rich. What are you telling me this for? There are fortunes to be made from chaos, B said. The carefully neutral survive unscathed and prosper. Oh, right. So you're the bloody Swiss in this metaphor. Because you seem more like... Yes, I'm a Nazi, B interrupted sarcastically. Please, don't be so predictable in your insults, dear. Nigel fumed silently as they reached a large clearing near the base of the Alps. There were stone benches there, and a marble fountain frozen solid for the winter. To the north was a large cabin, the welcome center for those skiing the Alps, its windows dark and abandoned. Attached to the cabin was a cable car that connected to the mountainous peak. B did a full 360, gazing around the field. We'll do it here, she declared. B grabbed a walkie-talkie from her hip and spoke into it, waving her hand back and forth. Do you see me, Captain?
We see you,
a man's voice crackled over the walkie.
Setting up now.
Silva, Isabella, São Paulo, Brazil. Shapeshifter. Silva exhibits excellent control of her legacy and adequate telekinesis. She displays tremendous situational intelligence that would recommend her for all manner of espionage activity. However, Silva suffered severe burns prior to becoming guard, and thus is constantly shapeshifting to maintain her appearance. She exhibits textbook narcissism and a disregard for authority, verging on the pathological. EarthGuard has assessed her as a potential RTH, and we are inclined to agree. Contact is not recommended.
Pah!
Isabella spat, and tossed the tablet through her open door and out into the skimmer's hallway.
Pathological my ass! Bastards!
Her rage was barely contained by the narrow supply closet that she'd declared her sleeping quarters. There wasn't a lot of private space aboard the skimmer, so she dumped the crap that was in here and moved in a sleeping bag. She'd enjoyed her few days posing as Lucinda. The woman had a very comfortable bed. Isabella's hand shook. She touched her cheek. Smooth. Unblemished. They knew about her. The tablet had belonged to one of the Foundation people Einar killed. She'd been scrolling through it, nosing through their files. And oh, were their files.
every guard that was enrolled in the academy, and some that weren't. The Foundation knew about them. They knew about her.
"Please don't go hurling around our evidence," Einar said, appearing in the hall outside Isabella's closet. He picked up the tablet and dusted it off. "We may actually need this."
Isabella sniffed haughtily to show her disregard, but also to hide the frustrated tears in her eyes.
"They wrote bad things about me," she said.
"I know. I read it."
She glared at him.
"You should read my dossier when you have a chance," Einar said. "If you thought yours was bad..."
"They called me a... what was it? An RTH.
"Risk to humanity," Einar said. "They call me that too."
Isabella's eyebrows shot up.
"But you are a killer. Why should I be lumped in with you?"
Einar shrugged.
"They think they can predict our futures," he said.
Isabella considered this.
"You should prove them wrong."
"What do you mean by that?"
"Stop acting like an angry child. Stop killing. Bring them to justice. There are good people at Earthguard. They will help."
Einar pursed his delicate lips.
"You just want to save Nigel's mother. I understand. He's your friend. But trust me, she is not worth saving."
"You read our files, yes? Then you know that the guard at the academy liked Nigel. He was a hero during the invasion. You want to unite the guard? Prove you are not a shitty little villain? Well, you need to stop killing people's moms and dads."
"You're oversimplifying things," Einar muttered.
But he was listening. He was looking at Isabella the same way that Caleb had last night, waiting for an answer.
"I have a plan," Isabella declared. "For when we get there, a fate worse than death for these Foundation bastards."
"What's worse than death?"
Isabella touched her smooth cheek, and for a moment let her appearance waver. Einar's eyes widened as he caught a glimpse of her scars.
"For these people," Isabella smiled, "being seen for who they truly are."
From his vantage point, Nigel could see a dozen or so Blackstone mercenaries moving about on the rooftops at the edge of town. They'd have an unobstructed line of sight down to the clearing where he and his mom stood. He was sure there were others, too, who weren't visible to him. Maybe in the cabin, maybe up on the cable car.
"You sure you've got enough men?"
"One sniper would be enough for Einar," B said. "His legacies are only effective at close range. I'll have every angle covered."
"You thought of everything," Nigel said dryly.
"Darling, when I plan an ambush, I plan an ambush."
"Might not even show up."
"He'll show up," B replied. "I made sure to leave ample breadcrumbs for him to follow."
Nigel squinted. It looked like one of the mercs was carrying a rocket launcher. He whistled.
"Is that a bazooka up there? Christ, Mum, going to blow us all up?"
"My dear, it's always best to be prepared for the unexpected."
"Do you know what you've done?" Agent Walker shouted. "We're talking international incident here."
"You said our mission is to find Einar," Ran replied coldly. "She will help us do that."
"We've kidnapped the daughter of a sheikh from a nation that doesn't participate in Earthguard," Walker responded. "Do you have any idea how illegal that is?"
Ran tapped her temple.
"Is this legal?"
"You didn't kidnap me," Rabia added. "I came willingly."
Walker and Ran didn't acknowledge her, too deep in their own argument. Kopano sighed and put his hand on Rabia's shoulder.
They're always fighting, he said. In the meantime, best to just enjoy the view.
They stood on a mossy cliff overlooking a gorge filled with overgrown jungle. Fog rolled across the valley below, and through the misty gaps, Kopano saw the remains of an ancient village. Stone temples and houses, all built into the mountain walls. Next to him, a laurelite stone jutted out of the ground.
Where have you brought us exactly? He asked Rabia.
Machu Picchu, in Peru,
she replied, hugging herself.
No one has discovered this laurelite growth yet, so it's free from the usual checkpoints and security guards. I come here sometimes to think.
Kopano glanced over at her. She was hard to get a read on, but he thought he saw loneliness in her eyes.
You can just teleport all over the world and see such amazing things, Kopano said with a grin. What a legacy! I'm jealous.
Yes, it's great until someone is trying to kill you.
You can just teleport away.
It's not always so easy.
Kopano took a deep breath and extended his arms, letting the breeze blow across his chest.
At the academy, they will teach you ways to defend yourself. You'll love it.
Rabia glanced back at Walker and ran.
Will they let me stay? If they send me back to my father after what I did...
Things will work out,
Kopano assured her, although he wasn't so certain of that anymore. He fingered the inhibitor chip in his pocket, the one that he'd pulled out of his own head. What reason did he have to be positive, when everything lately had sucked so hard? He thought of Taylor, back at the academy, probably worried sick about him. He'd made a promise to her, too, about keeping her safe and making life boring. Now he wasn't around to keep it. He thought about kissing her, about how their relationship was just getting started. Now it was Kopano who had loneliness in his eyes. Agent Walker snapped her fingers at Rabia and Kopano as they both stared wistfully across Machu Picchu's crumbled architecture. Apparently, she and Ran had finished their latest argument.
All right, since we're in this mess and we can't hide in Peru forever, we might as well know.
Walker resignedly addressed Rabia.
Where is Einar?
Switzerland, she replied. Or at least, he will be there.
Why Switzerland?
There's a meeting happening there between one of the Foundation heads and one of their biggest customers. He won't be able to resist.
And you know this how?
The woman from the Foundation approached my father about acquiring my services for the meeting. Apparently, she wanted a quick getaway.
Rabia had held Walker's gaze throughout the mini-interrogation, but now she looked away.
He denied her, but I heard the details. The meeting is soon.
Walker ran a hand through her hair.
Jesus. So this is all just a hunch of yours?
No,
Rabia replied sharply.
The Foundation woman in question is Bea Barnaby. She recruited Einar. He won't be able to resist attacking her.
But he might not even know about this meeting, Walker groaned.
Ran stepped in close to Rabia.
Did you say Barnaby?
Yes, Rabia replied. I think you know her son.
Kopano's stomach dropped. There really wasn't much reason for optimism in this world. None at all.
How close can you get us? Ran asked.
Rabia draped her hand against the laurelite growth.
Close.
Chapter 33. Taylor Cook, Engelberg, Switzerland.
Where are all the people?
Taylor, the XO, and six other Blackstone mercenaries walked purposefully through the deserted streets of the Swiss hamlet. It was a quaint little spot at the base of the mountains. In her past life, Taylor would have loved to visit a place like this. Now, she saw shadows moving in every abandoned window.
"Boss lady had them evacuated," the XO replied. "Cipher that way."
"So you're expecting trouble?"
He gave Taylor a look.
"Cook, not a day goes by I'm not expecting trouble."
Taylor had to admit it was a stupid question, but she was nervous. The XO and his men had geared up when they arrived. They all wore body armor now and heat vision goggles on their foreheads. All their weapons were tethered to their armor by titanium alloy cords, so their guns couldn't be ripped away by telekinesis. Taylor also noticed that some of them had adopted Mogadorian energy blasters recovered from the warship raid. A telekinetic could knock a bullet off course, but not redirect an energy beam. That meant they were expecting trouble from guard. But who? The sun was going down. The snow on the mountains was tinted pink and dark purple. The clouds in the sky, a wispy ripple. Taylor's breath misted in the cool air, but this was nothing compared with the temperatures in Mongolia. A nice night. Too nice for a fight. They rounded the corner and approached a clearing near the mountains. Taylor spotted two people up ahead. Not military by the look of them. Civilians. The woman, with her close-cropped blonde hair and her long winter overcoat, Taylor recognized immediately as B. But the guy next to her made Taylor gasp and stop in her tracks, causing one of the mercenaries to bump into her with a grumble. "Nigel." Taylor forced her feet to plod forward, her mind racing. The last time she'd seen Nigel had been on New Year's Day. He'd gone to London to bury his father and never returned. His shady disappearance had propelled Taylor to this point. And now, the resemblance clicked into place. B and Nigel. Mother and son. Jesus Christ. If Nigel was Foundation, that would mean her cover was completely blown, and she was walking right into a trap. No, he couldn't be. Not Nigel. That wouldn't be punk rock at all. But Miki had said they had ways. Ways of manipulating you. Turning you. His own mom. The distance between them was closing. He stared at her. B smiled warmly. Taylor didn't know what to say, how to play this situation. If only they had a minute alone so she could feel this out. Hell with it, Taylor thought. Be natural. Be yourself. Being herself meant rushing the last few steps up to Nigel and hugging him.
Oh my God, Nigel! You're okay! They told us... Well, they didn't tell us anything, she gushed. We thought you could be...
He didn't hug her back. Instead, Nigel extricated his gangly limbs from under Taylor's arms and took her by the shoulders, holding her at arm's length.
Oi, he said with a sneer. Getting the stink of sellout all over me.
Oh, do calm down, dear, B said. Not everyone can be as hopelessly righteous and naive as you.
Been bitching about how unhappy you were for months, Nigel said to Taylor, ignoring his mom. But I never thought you'd actually go through with this shit and join these craps.
Taylor had to stifle a smile. He was playing along. She felt a weight lift from her shoulders. She'd forgotten what it was like to have an ally. It took some effort to cock her head defensively and raise her voice.
You never understood how much was wrong with that place, she said sharply. Do you know what happened to Ran and Copano, huh?
Nigel turned away, as if he couldn't stand the sight of Taylor.
Now, B said, clapping her hands twice. There will be plenty of time to smooth out these squabbles later. For now, we must present a unified front. Our guests are arriving.
Taylor and Nigel both looked to the sky, as a silver vessel sliced through the clouds and descended. The thing looked like a giant frisbee. No, more like a B-movie flying saucer.
The shit is this, then? Nigel asked. The Martians invading?
That, B replied, would be Mr. Wade Seidel.
Taylor knew the name. The weapons manufacturer and inventor. The one who designed the gear the harvesters had used against them. She glanced at Nigel. His face was screwed up, and he chewed his bottom lip. He was confused. So, his mom hadn't filled him in on every detail.
"You're selling him the stuff we brought from Siberia," Taylor stated to B.
"Indeed," she replied.
They formed up around B as Seidel's saucer landed across the clearing. Nigel and Taylor stood on either side of her, the XO next to Taylor. His men fanned out in a loose half-circle behind them. An entrance ramp extended from the saucer, and a trio of dark-suited security guards filed down the ramp. They didn't look nearly as fearsome as the Blackstone mercenaries. They were lacking body armor, blasters, and a great deal of facial scarring. They looked warily at B's gang, but eventually called the all-clear back into the ship. Moments later, a boyish man with jet-black hair and a wide smile sauntered down the ramp. He extended his arms in cheerful greeting as he crossed the grass.
"B, you old hellcat! What a dramatic location you've chosen for..."
Taylor didn't hear the rest of his words. She was too distracted by the three people who made their way out of Seidel's saucer. Melanie Jackson, Taylor had never met, but she knew from all the magazine covers and YouTube videos. She was the face of Earthguard. Daniela Morales, Taylor had encountered briefly before. She was one of the first to develop legacies, one of the only ones to fight alongside John Smith. And Caleb Crane, her friend, her fellow fugitive. He looked as shocked to see Taylor and Nigel as they were to see him.
"Christ, one reunion after another," Nigel muttered.
The two groups stood on opposite sides of the clearing, not getting too close. Caleb awkwardly raised a hand and waved. Nigel gave him a too-cool up nod. Taylor just stared. Of course, the adults were talking. They loved talking.
"Is that my acquisition your man has there?"
Seidel asked, gesturing at the XO.
"It is," B replied.
She took a smartphone out of her coat and checked the screen.
"Haven't seen the transfer clear yet, Wade."
Seidel took out his own phone and pressed a button.
"There. A whole metric butt-ton of moolah was just transferred to your daughter's trust account. Like you asked."
That caused Nigel to give his mom a look. B checked her screen, and satisfied with what she saw, gestured for the XO to bring Seidel the case. As the XO marched across the field, Seidel took a closer look at B's group. His forehead creased in consternation when he noticed Taylor and Nigel. Maybe she was mistaken, but Taylor thought he recognized them.
"B? Light of my life,"
Seidel said, his voice tense despite the levity.
"Are those guard I see at your side?"
B glanced at Nigel and Taylor, as if just noticing them.
"Why, yes," she said. "Only two, I'm afraid. Couldn't acquire my third in time. You've got quite the entourage yourself."
"These three are lawfully assigned to me by Earthguard," Seidel responded,
a note of righteousness in his voice. Yours, forgive me, B, but you aren't authorized to have them as far as I know. Taylor hated this. She hated these two talking about the guard like they were things, like they were accessories. Yet, through her annoyance, she also sensed something important playing out. If Seidel dealt with the Foundation, then he already knew they had guard at their disposal. But B had put him in the same space as them, with witnesses. She'd implicated him, and now he was trying to play it off.
"My son and his friend are here of their own free will," B replied, her haughty tone goading. "Are you going to go tattle on me, Wade?"
Seidel's face twisted like he had a bad taste in his mouth. He snatched the reinforced briefcase containing the Mogadorian ooze away from the XO and handed it off to Melanie. Poor girl. She looked more confused than anyone, and now she was stuck handling something truly toxic.
"As a law-abiding citizen, it is my obligation to report you," Seidel said. "This was very stupid of you, B. Very, very stupid. Our whole relationship..."
He paused, as if trying to rein himself in from saying more.
"Our whole relationship is based on... discretion. You're ruining something great,"
Case delivered. The XO had started his way back to B's group. The soldiers looking on weren't very tense. They probably interpreted this whole thing the same way Taylor did, as a pair of rich assholes showing who could piss the highest. That's why none of them reacted initially, at the sudden whoosh through the air. Just like that, the XO was flattened by a giant mass. He lay on his back, writhing, one of his legs twisted, his arm bent awkwardly over his head. At first, Taylor thought that a rock had fallen off the mountain and struck him. But then the rock stood up. The XO's attacker wore a baggy hooded sweatshirt that did little to hide his hideousness. His skin was an abnormal patchwork. Mostly, it looked to be the consistency of gleaming steel, but then there were islands of cancerous black that reminded Taylor of the puddle of ooze she'd stepped in. The guy had only one eye, and he swung it back and forth to take in both Seidel's group and B's. Nigel took a half step back.
"Five," he breathed.
"Anyone who shoots,"
Five shouted,
"gets their head ripped off."
Chapter 34. Caleb Crane, Engelberg, Switzerland. Seconds after Five landed on one of B. Barnaby's mercenaries and flattened him like a pancake, a Mogadorian skimmer began its descent from above. The ship looked nothing like the sleek disk Seidel had built using its technology. This vessel appeared to have been through a war and was barely holding together. Scorch marks on its sides, pieces hanging loose where they shouldn't, a visible crack in the windshield. As spaceships went, it was a junker.
"You know who that is, right?"
Daniela whispered to Caleb.
"Yeah, of course,"
he replied, trying to simultaneously watch the skimmer descend and keep an eye on Five. Unreal. This had to be the "we" Isabella had been referring to. What the hell had she gotten herself into?
"I don't," Melanie hissed at them. "Who is he?"
"Five," Daniela replied.
"The Lorik?" Melanie snorted. "Shut up. He's dead."
"He isn't dead," Caleb said. "Obviously." Melanie held up the suitcase she'd gotten from Seidel like a shield.
"Oh my God!"
Seidel himself clearly wasn't used to surprises like this. Or, for that matter, threats about decapitation. He stomped his foot and screamed across the field at B.
What is the meaning of this, Barnaby?
One of Seidel's guards touched his arm to keep him